church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Justice and Peace. I am John Baptist Tumusime. On Tuesday, Pope Francis issued a tweet reminding Catholics that saints are witnesses whom we venerate and who in thousands of different ways bring us to Jesus Christ, the only Lord and mediator between God and humanity. The Pope added that they, the saints, remind us that holiness can blossom even in our lives, however weak and marked by sin. Meanwhile, during his apostolic visit to Slovakia, Pope Francis held a private meeting with members of the Jesuit order and encouraged them to proclaim the gospel of Christ with more vigor. Benedict Mayaki filed the following report.
Pope Francis urged the members of the Jesuit order engaged in pastoral work in Slovakia to serve God's people inspired by one word, closeness. First, he told them, closeness with God. He stressed the importance of prayer that draws us closer to God and warned against falling into the temptation of being too busy to pray. Next, he underlined the importance of closeness among themselves, a charitable love among brothers which helps to build community life. The Holy Father also emphasized closeness to the bishop and finally closeness with the people of God. He encouraged the Jesuits to go to the peripheries and the crossroads while keeping a spirit of obedience to their provincials. Pope Francis then spoke about the challenges of the Church in the face of the temptation to go backwards in search of security. He noted that in a world that is so conditioned by dependencies and virtuality, it frightens us to be free. We are afraid to move forward in pastoral experiences, he said. We are afraid to accompany people with sexual diversity. We are afraid of the crossroads. The Pope went on to warn against seeking the way out in rigidity and clericalism, adding that it is beautiful to bring forward the freedom of the gospel. He, however, cautioned against imprudence, stressing that we need to be attentive and vigilant, moving forward in discernment and obedience. The Holy Father also spoke on his decision to redefine celebrations with the pre-conciliar liturgy so as to return to the true intentions of Pope Benedict XVI and Pope St. John Paul II. He restated that permission from Rome must be sought for those who want to celebrate the old rite as it is done with bi-ritualism. Pope Francis then responded to a question on the growing global concern for migrants and refugees and reiterated his call that migrants need to be welcomed, protected, promoted and integrated, keeping in mind the capacities of their host countries. The Holy Father went on to stress the importance of studying the phenomenon to understand its causes and consequences, particularly situations of migration caused by geopolitical factors. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
The conference on the safeguarding of minors, which opened on Sunday in the Polish city of Warsaw, has entered its third day. It is organized by the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors and the Polish Catholic Bishops' Conference. The participants are representatives from the bishops' conferences of Central and Eastern Europe. One of the key speakers at the conference is Carlos Cruz, a survivor of clerical sex abuse. He was recently nominated to be a member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. He told Vatican Radio on Tuesday that his mission is to bring the voice of the survivors to the attention of the Church.
I want to try and insert the survivor's view of the commission and what's happening in the world, because I have connections with many survivor organizations and people, and I feel my job in after this appointment is bring that view to very smart and good people with great hearts. But I think a survivor's view is really important. So inserting the view of the survivor constantly and maybe reminding, not that they need reminder, but you know when it merits, remind them that we're doing this for survivors, even though it's not like a place where we receive survivors or like a home, but it is instilling urgency, accountability, and hopefully consequences to organizations in the Vatican and in the church, in the local churches, that have this urgency to help survivors because we're not doing a great job.
Carlos Cruz, a survivor of clerical sexual abuse, is speaking there from Warsaw in Poland at the conference on the safeguarding of minors. The Catholic bishops of Kenya and major Protestant churches in the country have issued rules that block politicians from addressing the faithful from the pulpits because places of worship cannot be turned into political campaign platforms. In a pastoral letter released last week, the Catholic bishops directed all Catholic parishes across the country to enforce the ban, citing increased use of places of worship to promote partisan politics and flout COVID-19-related rules. The pastoral letter came 3 days after the head of the Anglican Church in Kenya, Archbishop Jackson Olsapit, denied a chance to politicians to speak to the faithful during a church service he was presiding at in Western Kenya. The Presbyterian Church of East Africa, on its part, imposed the ban in July this year, pointing out its concerns about the growing use of the pulpit to disseminate divisive politics. Kenya will hold presidential and parliamentary elections in August next year, and politicians are now selling their manifestos to the public. Places of worship have become attractive centers for them because they are attended by many people. The United Nations General Assembly Summit opened in the U.S. city of New York on Tuesday. It is attended by heads of states and heads of government. The summit is discussing the challenges the world is facing today, particularly the COVID-19 pandemic. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has noted that one of the challenges posed by the pandemic is the closure of schools and has appealed to countries to find solutions. Reports from Liberia say the newly appointed Apostolic Administrator of the Archdiocese of Monrovia, Father Charles Boyce, died on Sunday of cancer. He was appointed in June by Pope Francis when the archdiocese became vacant after the resignation of Archbishop Louis Jerome Ziegler, who had reached the age limit. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
A series of explosions hit Burundi's economic capital, Bujumbura, killing at least 3 people and injuring dozens on Monday evening, police and media reports said. It is the latest in a string of attacks in the Central African country. Witnesses said at least 2 grenades exploded in a bus parking area, causing panic. A 3rd explosion targeted a market, and a 4th grenade exploded near a parked bus in the suburbs. The blasts in Bujumbura followed a deadly grenade explosion in a bar in the political capital Gitega on Sunday and a series of mortars launched on Burundi's international airport on Saturday night. A rebel group known as the Red Tabara said it carried out the attack at Bujumbura's airport on Saturday. The government of Sudan reported a coup attempt on Tuesday by a group of soldiers but said the attempt failed and that the military remains in control. Sudan state-run television called on the public to counter the attempt, but did not provide further details. Reports from the capital Khartoum and nearby Omdurman say there has been intense military activity and the main bridge across the Nile has been closed. Sudan is being ruled under a fragile power-sharing deal between the military and civilians following the overthrow of former President Omar el-Bashir in April 2019. Transitional authorities have said they had foiled or detected previous coup attempts linked to factions loyal to Mr. el-Bashir. The United States has urged Somalia's president and prime minister to resolve their differences for the sake of stability of the country. A statement by the State Department spokesman Ned Price said the cooperation of Somalia's leaders, especially President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo and Prime Minister Hussein Roble, were essential for the country to quickly complete its ongoing electoral process. The dispute between the two leaders, sparked by the government's handling of a case involving a missing spy, has raised fears that Somalia's electoral process could suffer further setbacks. The row escalated last week after the president suspended the executive powers of Mr. Roble, a move swiftly rejected by the premier as unlawful. The Justice Department of the United States has said the $26.6 million seized from Equatorial Guinea's vice president, Theodorine Nguema Obiang Mange, will be spent on COVID-19 vaccines and other medical programs in the West African state. Mr. Obiang was forced to sell a mansion in Malibu, California, and other assets as part of a settlement he reached with the U.S. authorities in 2014 after being accused of corruption and money laundering. He denies the charges. A statement from the department said the U.N. is to receive $19.25 million to purchase and administer COVID vaccines to at least 600,000 people, while a US-based charity is to get $6.35 million for other medical programs in Equatorial Guinea. Cameroon's government says separatist rebels killed 15 Cameroonian soldiers and several civilians in two bomb attacks this month. The first attack occurred on the 12th of September in Kumbo, a town in the northwest region, when a military convoy was hit by an improvised explosive device, or IED. 4 days later, another convoy in the village of Bamessing was hit by an IED and an anti-tank rocket launcher before coming under heavy gunfire. In a statement on Monday, the Defense Ministry said the use of more sophisticated weaponry represented a paradigm change in the fighting and suggested the militants were getting their hardware from violent fundamentalist groups outside Cameroon. Insurgents seeking to form a breakaway state called Ambazonia began fighting the military in 2017 after civilian protests calling for greater representation of the Anglophone minority were violently repressed. The conflict has claimed more than 3,000 lives and hundreds of thousands more have been displaced. Cameroon's west borders Nigeria, home to violent Islamist groups like Boko Haram and other non-affiliated bandits. France has announced plans to host an international conference on Libya in November as the country prepares for elections at the end of December. Speaking on Monday during a press conference on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York, French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said the 12th November meeting will be co-hosted with Germany and Italy. Mr. Le Drian also said France is seeking for the elections to be held on schedule and for the departure of foreign forces and mercenaries from Libya. He said his German and Italian counterparts, Heiko Maas and Luigi Di Maio, will also co-chair a meeting devoted to Libya on Wednesday in New York. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt has officially declared his country's interest in hosting next year's 27th UN Climate Conference, or COP27. Speaking on Monday, Mr. Sisi said Egypt is offering to host the climate change conference on behalf of the African continent. This year's conference, known as COP26, will be hosted by the United Kingdom in Glasgow, Scotland in November. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The The 76th United Nations General Assembly opened on Tuesday in the U.S. city of New York. The week-long meeting is attended by heads of state and representatives of governments of the 193 member state countries. The meeting is guided by the theme, Building Resilience Through Hope. Unlike last year's assembly, when heads of state and governments addressed the assembly online, this year they have gathered in New York and the first speeches were delivered on Tuesday. Before the opening, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed reporters and spoke about the need for countries to work together to end the COVID-19 pandemic.
A virus has defeated the world. More than 1 year and a half after everything started, we still have the virus spreading everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we see a dramatic impact on the lives of people, a dramatic increase in inequalities, economies in extremely difficult situations, and of course the most vulnerable suffering enormously. And the world was not able to come together and to define a global vaccination plan, mm-hmm. and bringing the countries that produce vaccines or can produce vaccines together with the World Health Organization, with the international financial institutions, to then deal with the pharmaceutical industry and double the production and make sure that there is an equitable distribution at the production. Mm-hmm. This cannot be done by a country alone. Mm-hmm. It needs to be done by all. The problem is that the multilateral institution we have now, which is essentially WHO has not even the power to obtain information about the situation. It has not the power to investigate about the origins of a disease. So, I mean, we need to solve the problem bringing everybody together, mm-hmm. but we need to have multilateral institutions with a stronger capacity of governance in order to be able to prevent and in order to be able to solve the challenges that we face. And if we talk about climate, mm-hmm. it is the same. Mm-hmm. We are on the verge of the abyss. The truth is that the objective very clearly fixed by the scientific community that mm-hmm. temperatures should not go above 1.5 degrees mm-hmm. Until the end of the century. Mm-hmm. We are risking not to be able to do it because countries are not cooperating among themselves. Countries, mm-hmm. there is a lot of mistrust between developed countries, developing countries. There is a north-south divide that is making it difficult for all to assume commitments to reduce emissions in order to have a drastic reduction in the next decade mm-hmm. or to reach carbon neutrality in 2050. It's clear that only cooperating we can solve the problems. But the institutions we have no teeth. So, and sometimes, even when they have teeth, mm-hmm. like it is the case of the Security Council, they have not much appetite to bite. We need a multilateral group of institutions networked, working together, because everything now is interlinked, mm-hmm. and with more authority in order to be able to mobilize the whole international community to solve the problems that we face.
Let us now focus on COVID-19. Specifically, you have been insisting that no one is safe until everyone is safe. But the reality is different, especially in Africa, where with less than 2% of the people vaccinated. And in many parts of the world, vaccines are not being used. What must be done for developed or richer nations to accept and act on the fact that the fight against COVID-19 can only succeed as a common global enterprise?
We need a global vaccination plan, mm-hmm. and we need to be able to bring together all those that produce or can produce vaccines mm-hmm. and double the production and have an equitable distribution. This has been clearly our appeal, unfortunately mm-hmm. not yet met. And the result is what you said. Mm-hmm. I mean, my country that has been very successful is now 80% of the population fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. In Africa, as you mentioned, there are countries with less than 2%. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, this virus is spreading like wildfire in the global south, mm-hmm. and spreading like wildfire, it is mutating, it mm-hmm. is changing. Mm-hmm. And there is a risk that at a certain moment, one of these mutations will bring a virus that is able to resist the vaccines that now are applied. And in that day, nobody will be safe, in mm-hmm. the south and in the north, not even in the countries where everybody was vaccinated. So this is a reason to understand that the priority must be to vaccinate everybody everywhere. And that is why we made an appeal for all the measures to be taken in order to guarantee that 70% of the population of the world will be vaccinated in the middle of next year. in an equitable way, not 100% in one place and 20% in another.
So around the whole world. Let's turn now to Afghanistan. Situation is a huge concern, especially for women. What broad strategy do you think the UN and its partners should adopt to best help the people of Afghanistan now?
The situation is unpredictable. We all want Afghanistan to have an inclusive government. We all want Afghanistan to respect human rights, and especially about women and girls. Mm-hmm. We all want Afghanistan never to be again a center for terrorists of other countries to have a safe haven. We all want Afghanistan to fight drug trafficking. But it is difficult to forecast what's going to happen. It's still unclear what's going to happen. But I think that the UN has a duty. And our duty is to engage. To engage based on what we can deliver, and what we can deliver is essentially humanitarian aid at the present moment, and to engage in order to explain to the Taliban how important it is for them to have an inclusive government of all the different ethnicities, and of course with women, to have women and girls' rights respected. Women must be able to work. Girls must be able to have all levels of education. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, to cooperate with the international community fighting terrorism in an effective way. So we need to engage with the Taliban. And that's what we have done. Mm-hmm. We have sent Martin Griffith, our emergency relief coordinator and head of the Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, to go to Kabul and to speak with the Taliban leadership on how can we deliver humanitarian aid, how can it be done in a safe environment, how can it be done in an equitable way in which there are no discriminations of any kind. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, to engage with them on the other aspects about human rights and other forms of cooperation that are essential. So we need to engage. Mm-hmm. We don't know how things will develop, but we know that if we don't engage, they will probably go in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And then we need to mobilize the international community to provide humanitarian aid. The Afghan people is suffering so much. It is vital to bring to the Afghans food, medicine, and other basic forms of support to avoid the catastrophic situation in the country. And another concern we have is because of all the different measures and sanctions that exist, there is a risk of completely strangling the economy. So I think the international community must find ways to inject some cash in the Afghan economy in order to avoid the collapse of the economy that would have devastating consequences in relation to the life of the Afghans, and also provoking a massive exodus that, of course, would be a factor of instability in the whole region.
Let's turn now on the issue of gender equality. In many countries around the world, women are still left behind on multiple fronts. You've done a lot to advance the issue of gender parity here in the United Nations, and many critics charge that the UN should be driving this agenda more forcefully. What actions do you wish to see implemented to ensure that gender equality is a reality by 2030?
There are many dimensions. Of course, the representation of women in the different organs of the UN and also at national and international level, the questions of support to women entrepreneurs and the economic empowerment of women, fighting gender-based violence that is still a terrible situation in conflict areas, but at home. In many, many circumstances, abolishing discriminatory legislation that still exists in many countries where full equality between women and men are not in the law. All these things are priorities for us. But there is a central question, which is a question of power. Mm-hmm. Power today in the world is still essentially concentrated on men and with a male-dominated culture. And power is usually not given. Power is taken. So we need women to fully fight for their rights, and we need the men that understand that only with full gender equality the world will improve and the problems will be solved. We need those men to engage effectively in the fight for gender equality. We must have the same in governments, we must have the same in parliaments, we must have the same in all bodies. We need to have women and men in full equality where decisions are taken, where power exists, to make sure that we change this unbalanced power relationship that is the result of centuries of male domination and patriarchy.
Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, speaking there to Assumpta Masoi of the United Nations News Center. And lastly, as you have heard in the news, the conference on the safeguarding of minors, which opened on Sunday in the Polish city of Warsaw, has entered its third day. It is organized by the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors and the Polish Catholic Bishops' Conference. The participants are representatives from bishops' conferences of Central and Eastern Europe. The participants are discussing ways of protecting children against sexual and other abuses by the clergy, religious, and other members of the Catholic Church. Most of the participants have emphasized that the church must be a safe place for children and vulnerable people, and no one should use his or her position in the church to take advantage of them. Sexual abuse of children is a world problem within the Catholic Church. Pope Francis has approved laws to deal with the problem at all levels of the church, and indeed, since the promulgation of these laws, church leaders who have been found to have either abused children or protected abusers have been punished severely, with some being deflocked and others being laicized. Father Hans Zullner is a member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors.
The goal of this conference is, first and foremost, to show that the Church has to engage and to commit in the protection of minors and other vulnerable people in any place in the world, in any region. So we are happy that for the first time we have a major conference organized in the Central and Eastern European countries. Certainly the churches there have been under siege for decades under the reign of communism. And there has been certainly some difficult situation there in dealing openly with criticism, with wrongdoings, and with handling cases of abuse.
Father Hans Zullner, a member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, speaking there from Warsaw in Poland. And that was Justice and Peace for this week. You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.